Hey, everybody, welcome to another edition of the Bald Move TV podcast, the officially unofficial podcast for all of television. I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
I don't know we say all of television, but I feel like we've had a Netflix hegemony the last few weeks. Mm-hmm. We're breaking it up a little bit. We got one Netflix original, one Prime original.
Yeah.
We're going to be talking about the Prime original Lorena, which is a documentary, four-part documentary produced by Jordan Peele. That looks at the Lorena Bobbitt story, the John and Lorena Bobbitt story. And finally, we'll be talking about the Netflix original, The Umbrella Academy, which is based on a graphic novel of the same name. And it's about a team of young people that have extraordinary talents gathered by a wealthy older man in a mansion. It's essentially a deconstruction of the X-Men, and we'll be talking about that. Let's start with the Umbrella Academy, and let's go high level first. What did you think of the Umbrella Academy, and what's your interest in pursuing it further?
I actually liked this first episode quite a bit. I thought the writing was good.
Mm-hmm.
The scenario they've constructed to bring all these people back together, the way that they kind of fill in the backstory of this group of children is actually pretty well done.
Yeah.
I never felt lost, but at the same time, I never felt like we were getting too much. We were getting just what we needed at any given time to really make us understand these people. So, yeah, I thought it was a really good first episode.
I agree. I kind of like am a little bit more, I think, open to enjoying this kind of thing. Like, I don't suffer from superhero fatigue. If anything, back in the day, I was an old school X-Men or any kind of mutant comics from Marvel. I also minored in Spider-Man, but X-Men was kind of my first comic love. So seeing something like this where I could easily imagine this is a what if version of X-Men, or, you know, what if Professor X was a slightly less warm character who cared about his pupils. I think it's pretty neat. And the world building's on point. Yeah. The action is surprisingly good. I was kind of prepared to deal with a little bit scaled down special effects. I don't know why with Netflix I would think that.
Yeah.
But the concept of this show, if I can really briefly outline it, is sometime in the past, 43 women around the world spontaneously gave birth when they were not pregnant when they essentially woke up unpregnant and then had a catastrophic pregnancy later that afternoon. They all delivered healthy children, and this wealthy eccentric went around purchasing as many children as he could. He ended up with 7.
Mm-hmm.
6 of which developed fantastic powers, anywhere from kind of mundane physical dexterity improvements all the way to essentially spatial and time travel.
Yeah. One of the most powerful beings in the universe, probably.
Yeah.
and then the other one developed the ability to always get carded wherever she goes.
Yeah. one of them is revealed has no powers whatsoever. She's always kind of been the fifth wheel, whatever banana and wheel it is when you're the odd person out. And this show bites Wes Anderson hard. Like, there's a scene, this is like the Royal Tenenbaums version of the X-Men, and it made sense as soon as I started researching the show. The showrunner is Steve Blackman. Now, you might not know this name, but he was one of the head writers of the Noah Hawley show Fargo. He's also the executive producer and co-showrunner on Legion, and co-showrunner on Netflix's Altered Carbon.
Okay, Legion makes a ton of sense.
Yeah. Legion, and I think even Fargo, like, there is a lot of Wes Anderson DNA in what Holly is doing on television, and his pupil here, Steve Blackman, seems to be carrying it even further. Because, like I said, this shit is Wes Anderson as fuck, and yeah. I'm not complaining because I like that aesthetic. Okay. Now I think we should probably talk maybe spoilers and like what we're really it's like, and also spoilers for the first episode out of 10. So like, this is all,
I don't even consider this spoilers.
Yeah. This is all stuff that's going to be part of the premise. before we talk about that, it's like, what are we going to do with this show? Are we going to try to watch some more of it and talk about it more next week? Or
I'll probably watch more of it, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if I can commit to watching the entire thing, but I'm definitely going to, unless this show falls off a cliff in the back half, I'm definitely going to finish it.
Okay.
I am engaged.
Yeah.
So what do we like about this?
So I really liked, like I said, the character setup I thought was good. I'm kind of hooked on the mystery, like who killed the dad for what reason.
Right.
And I'm also in for these superpowers. Like, I think the superpower of the teleporting kid is actually really cool and potentially super interesting. And I want to know how the world ends in 8 days.
Yeah. I like, how like some stuff is just like, there's this giant living on the moon. Why?
Right.
How did Ben die and under what circumstances? Like what? Yeah, why did the world... I love the idea of the time-traveling child because he is got the mind of an adult and he's trapped in this like teenage boy's body, which...
So that's the thing. Like, when you analyze his powers, he not only has the power to jump through through space, but also time.
Yeah.
And he must have the power to transfer his consciousness.
He does.
To either anyone or to at least himself in any form.
I mean, I got that he essentially formed a... older version of himself through some type of quantum fluctuation in the universe, made the body and then inhabited it.
Yes.
That's beyond just like Nightcrawler teleporting here or there,
right,
or even time travel.
Which to me is cooler.
I think it is very cool.
The possibilities are endless.
And I like the fact that we barely know everyone's special abilities. Like there's the one, I don't know any of these people's names, but there's the one lady who... is able to insinuate through a rumor to make things actually happen.
Is that Allison?
I think, yeah, maybe that's her name, Allison.
Okay. I don't know that I haven't matched the young faces with the older faces
right,
yet.
Right. I think that's because they, the drug addict, one of them who I quite enjoy his character, it says something like, well, you could always go back to the old rumor business. And she makes this dark thing about like, well, the last time I tried that XYZ happened. Mm-hmm. And you see her in her early days command the guy to shoot his friend into the foot. So
yeah,
I think that's what's going on there. The aforementioned drug addict is able to communicate with the dead.
Yep.
Which is played for laughs in an episode where their adopted stepfather's died. And also there's a scene at the end where it kind of becomes real. Where he's having this conversation with his dead colleague from years back. And I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I thought that character was going to become too much, and maybe he will over the course of the next X episodes. Mm-hmm. But so far in episode one, I didn't find him annoying, or I didn't find him as annoying as I found him funny,
right,
and enjoyable. So good job on that actor for keeping that part of the show lively.
And I'm also interested in the one guy who's still carrying on his father's legacy. He's like still out there cracking skulls with the guy who's actually still throwing knives and stuff around.
That's Diego?
Diego, yeah.
Oh, like busting crime, yeah.
Yeah, he's still like fighting criminals and whatnot. It seems like everybody else has stopped doing that.
But he's got that monocle at the end, which is made a big deal by the big guy. And they kind of connect the dots and say this must be the person who killed him, but I'm
which
not
means
sure
there's
about
no
that.
Way because I think that they definitely essentially framed Diego in episode one. There's no way he can be responsible just because narrative convention.
Yeah. And I assume that when they set up this big world ending catastrophe at the end of this episode, that one of the other 43 is probably going to be involved in this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because there are still 36 of them out
there. Right, and some of them might be squibs, although I will say that squibs is a Harry Potter thing for people that should have magical ability, but they, you know, like if your mom and dad's a witcher.
Okay, like Ellen Page in this, yeah.
Yeah, like you should have a special ability, but you don't. Odds are pretty high that she actually does have a super secret power that just hasn't manifested, right?
Mm-hmm.
I guess
it's 100%. It's 100%.
Okay, because I guess like I say that, that's what I was expecting. But then again, I guess it would be a subversion to just no. She's just a regular person.
Yeah, I mean it would definitely be a subversion. But I have the feeling.
Has Ellen Page advanced in age in 15 years?
There was maybe one scene where I saw that she has, but...
She had gotten, like, maybe a slight wrinkle in the corner of her eye.
Yeah, around the eyes, maybe a little bit, but it was in poor lighting. I feel like Ellen Page has aged very well.
I mean, we've got the whole, like, black don't crack. Should we have, like, a sub rule to that?
Page don't age. Page don't age, of course.
It's right there.
God damn it.
She's going, I mean, it'll be interesting because, like, if this is what she's looking like in her 30s, like,
yeah.
I could see her looking this way in the 50s. Like, what about this is going to go to shit in the next decade? That's, I mean, the curse is she's going to perpetually look like a 16, 17-year-old, but.
Right. That's, you know, that's why she gets carted everywhere.
Ralph Macchio made a career out of that. What'd you think about Pogo and Mom?
Dude, this is the one problem I have with this series. This fucking monkey butler. What are we doing? Like, I know it's a universe. Maybe this is a little strange to say in a universe where characters are teleporting through time and projecting their consciousness into the clones of themselves. But what the fuck are we doing with a monkey butler?
I mean,
one of the 43 that was spontaneously birthed?
No, I think he's a result of the old man's research or whatever.
The old man's research?
Yeah.
What? Monkey?
He's built an artificial intelligent life form that looks indistinguishable from a human woman. Like, he's doing all kinds of research.
So wildly different. This man is genius. The ultimate Renaissance man.
Yes.
It's too much. They did not need the monkey butler.
He's like a Richard Reed sub.
And frankly, they didn't need the robot mother either.
I am all in on the monkey man. And I also thought, like, there's some really interesting lines that made me think that they're going to explore what this means. But when he says, like, at the old man's funeral, he's like, I literally owe everything that I am to this man. He was my master and my friend. We don't typically in the 21st century describe anyone as masters nowadays, unless you're like a sensei type of like a master student relationship. Mm-hmm. I'm really interested to see if they like go through with like what that means and what that relationship was like. And because I think that would be interesting if you actually have a thinking commentary on what that like kind of like what they do with Rocket the Raccoon on Guardians of the Galaxy, where this guy, you know, it's not all awesome being a freakish experiment of science, and it's probably pretty lonely. Mm-hmm. And what do you do when the family that you've kind of known is starting to disintegrate? Because it seems like it's painting him and the poor mom android. I think she's, because like she seems like she's almost catatonic about the state of affairs. I think that's super interesting. I don't know, it's in there.
This to me feels like kitchen sink kind of writing where fuck it. We have to distinguish ourselves from the X-Men. So I don't know, monkey butler. Why not throw fucking space aliens in there too? Like, they just might. Put everything
we
in.
We started off on the moon. How sure are you that we're not going to have aliens?
I'm not sure, but I don't want it. Like,
X-Men have had aliens. Like, this is a...
Monkey butlers.
This is something... You got to set up stuff to be... I feel like this is like watching Star Trek The Next Generation and be like, Android Lieutenant Commander, come on. You know?
No,
like,
they didn't have fucking monkey. Their pets were not turning into anthropomorphized beings. Like, that's not how this shit goes down. I guess I like more focus in my storytelling, and this seems like just throw anything in there and let's just do it.
It's weird because... I don't know how extensive this graphic novel is. I don't know how many seasons of this that they've, like, it clearly feels like something that might have 4 or 5 seasons worth of material. And in which case, I think you got to establish things like the Monkey Man if you want to tell stories with them later, you know?
My thing is, don't tell stories with the Monkey Man.
just take the Monkey Man out of
it. Yeah, we could do without that or potentially even the robot.
What did you think about, we talked about it a little bit, but what did you think about the musical numbers? Like, I think
they
You're Alone Now
fine. It's
was a
not
lot of
my
fun.
Thing.
I think it's going to be a big part of the show.
Yeah.
Like, a very Legion where there's a lot of dance battles and, like,
I can
front sitter
that.
Pop culture references. And the only thing I want to talk about is, when did the Netflix logo start dissolving into a rainbow?
Like, a month?
This is,
to,
how
a couple
not,
weeks to a month ago?
How have I not noticed this? This is the first time where, like, maybe it's... I typically, when I'm starting a Netflix show, I'm beginning my docs document, too.
Maybe
this is the only time I looked up and saw it. And I'm like, when did it start doing that? That's kind of cool.
Yeah. No, it's been a bit.
So, good bet for next week that we'll, on this show, have some more coverage of the Umbrella Academy.
We'll have to decide how far in we want to watch.
Right.
To guarantee that we're you know, on the same page.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah, we'll definitely be talking about more of that next week. Anything else you want to say about the Umbrella Academy, the pilot episode, or should we move on to Lorena?
Let's move on.
Hey, before we get too much further in discussion of the two shows, I wanted to talk about some housekeeping. We are rapidly wrapping up our True Detective coverage of season 3, which has been really good. We got two more episodes to go. We'll be covering those over the next few weeks. So if you didn't know that we were back and doing True Detective, now you know. Check that out. We're having a lot of fun with it. It's been really active on the Bald Movies feed. We saw Lego Movie 2, the second part, I think is what it's called, last week. This week we saw Alita Battle Angel. We also saw a Netflix original, High Flying Bird, which is a really interesting look at the economics of what's essentially a look at like the struggle between labor and management as seen through the prism of a basketball players union negotiation. And it's really well done. Steven Soderbergh shot it all on an iPhone, and it's got a lot of big names. I think you guys will like it. That's in the Bald Movies feed. You can enjoy all that stuff right now. Also, I want to say just... take the time out to thank everyone that stopped by and supported our 24-hour Star Wars marathon we did last weekend. We raised over $15,000 for the National Alliance to End Homelessness. Probably be just over $16,000 by the time we add up all of the subs and the bit donations we got. We got a Twitter shout out from Mark Hamill, Luke Skywalker himself, which we were both over the moon about. We are going to have a wrap-up podcast later next week. I wasn't able to get with the National Alliance people in time to get one out this week, but we'll have a wrap-up where Jim and I talk about kind of highlights and our experiences, and we're going to talk about the charity, the National Alliance in Homelessness, and their mission and what they're doing with our money next week. So that'll be interesting. Also, it's not too late. I've gotten a lot of people asking. If you want to donate, it's still possible. If you go to groundhog.baldmove.com, there's a link where you can donate to make that final tally bigger. And as long as we get that before probably the wrap-up podcast, we'll just add that to the total to send to the National Alliance. So I'm very proud of the community we've built and how generous everybody was and how much fun we had, how much support. There's several people that like were there for almost the entire 24 hours, if not the entire 24 hours. There's a lot of like encouragement, and it as hard as it is to stay up for 24 hours and do anything, the Bald Move community made it as easy as it can by keeping us engaged and keeping us supported. So it's a great time. Check out groundhog.baldmove.com. We also have a link to the Twitch archive where you can actually go and see all 24 hours if you wanted to. If you just wanted to watch the last Jedi part of it where Mark Hamill gave us a shout out, that would be cool too. But thanks again. We'll be back next year, do it even bigger and better. And thanks so much. Hey, I want to talk about the club a little bit, club.baldmove.com. That's the primary way we get support here for this independent podcast of Bald Move. You get a lot of great features. Like right now, we talked about in the housekeeping section how active the movie feed's been. All those first-run Bald Movies, only the spoiler-free review is free. If you want to hear our spoiler takes on these topics, you have to be a club member. There's a lot of other compelling reasons: ad-free feeds, VIP access to forums, extra bonus video and audio content. You can see most of those features if you just go the club.baldmove.com. You can see a lot, all the descriptions and samples of the content, and you can try the club for free 30 days risk-free just by signing up for an account at club.baldmove.com. Moving on to Lorena. So this is the first of 4-part documentary about this thing that happened in the mid-90s where a woman just burst onto the scene, cut off her husband's penis, threw it into...
You can't say penis in public. You have to say ding-a-ling.
Yeah.
Ding-dong is acceptable.
There are lots of jokes, as you can tell, were made about this, and it might have... And man, I was looking at the comment sections for places that were like talking about this, and this still seems very sharply divided. Like there was a lot of people angry that she's being treated as the victim here. I thought the first episode was a little bit really leans heavily into just the absurdity and how the just a completely juvenile way this was treated by lawyers, doctors, cops, firemen, journalists, like everyone, like no one could get past the herder, this lady cut off a man's penis kind of argument. And that's kind of, it takes us through, because John was put on trial first because she alleged that the reason she cut off her husband's penis, because, you know, normally women don't just do crazy things like that, is because that there is a constant abuse and marital rape that this guy gets acquitted of in this episode, setting up her trial.
They describe his trial as sort of a dry run for the actual big trial, which is going
to
be the dick
trial. And it was a
trial.
Defense strategy to have it first so they could see, because, you know, she's going to be put on trial for, I think, grievously wounding someone is like what the official charge was. Which, yeah, cutting off a person's dick is, I would say, is a grievous wound.
I don't really like to ascribe to the tit for tat sort of justice system. So, like, chopping a dick off is bad in any context. But, you know, marital rape and abuse is bad in any context as well.
Yeah.
So I was like 9 years old or something when this whole thing was going down.
I was
my parents,
14 or 15.
They would not let me near this. At all, but I mean, of course, it bleeds in through, you know, it just permeates society. And I knew about the dick chopping, and it was a constant joke. So I sort of feel like they're going through the arc. Like they interview a couple of neighbors, and there's this guy on like an oxygen machine, and he says, like, my first reaction, I just fucking laughed out loud.
Yeah.
Cause it's hilarious. Oh, a guy got his dick chopped off. That's the funniest thing I've ever heard.
Right.
And to 9-year old me, that's the reaction I had. It seems like to most people, that's the reaction they had is either one, a repulsion and like this visceral gut feeling, which I also felt. Time they described it, I was
the severed dick on several occasions, which was somewhat surprising. I don't know why, because you can show anything, but
so I feel like they're going through kind of the arc as it took place, and so the initial reaction and the initial coverage being ha 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 dick chop is probably good, and I hope we move past that in this next episode.
Yeah. Well, I think it's because, to be honest, put all my cards on the table, I don't know the facts of this case.
I don't either.
I'm guessing, since it's being made nowadays, that what the point of this is going to be is that there's so much sensationalization about the dick being cut off.
Yeah.
And, you know, media in this time was very male dominated, and like the Me Too movement was not a glimmer in anyone's eye, is that the tragedy is this woman who went through hellish conditions was essentially made a butt of a joke. It's also possible that, you know, the opposite is true, is that like that she maybe was disturbed and she went off the deep end and cut this guy's penis off. And, you know, and that would be offensive, I guess, because, you know, she's made out to be a victim and she's really the aggressor. And I don't know which, and this episode itself does feel like it's kind of playing neutral and keeping that kind of mystery alive. Although it did do, I think, a good job of setting the societal stage. Like, this was a contemporary of the Anita Hill hearings, where a woman made a credible accusation of this guy behaving boorishly and sexually harassing people at work. And everyone is essentially like, well, we don't believe you. And we're going to do. It was also during the Tailhook scandal, which, if you recall, involved, I think, 100 naval aviators sexually assaulting and or raping something like 78 women over the course of like a weekend, the conference convention thing.
Jesus.
And how almost nothing, like nothing was done to the men that a part of that investigation. They're painting this picture. The fact that like the first battered women's shelter had opened, and they had like this, the C. Everett Scott, the old Surgeon General, talking about how, you know, spousal abuse is the number one cause of injury to women. And it's like this major thing that no one takes seriously. So, like, I feel like it's going towards, like, Lorena Bobbitt is an unfortunate person who existed in this system where no one took her seriously. And she lashed out and tried to protect herself in this crazy outlandish way. I don't know. I do know that I had a visceral dislike of so many of the people involved in here. Like this police officer who wouldn't touch a dick.
Oh my. Yeah.
Like what? the hell is wrong with you? Like, in a sane world, that you everyone would make fun of what a pussy this guy's being. Like, with gloves on, you won't touch another man's severed penis. That's part of an active crime investigation.
Yeah.
What the hell is wrong with you?
No, that was ridiculous. The brothers of John Bobbitt seem like they might be assholes.
Yeah, that these guys are essentially like
roaming the streets looking for someone to kill, is kind of in the news recently. Yeah. Not a good look on any occasion.
Yeah, you just go on, I don't want to go and find somebody and kill them. I mean, there are some things that are pretty funny. Like, the one thing that is funny is they find this severed penis outside of a 7-Eleven, and they go in and they get like a Slurpee cup full of ice, wrap the penis in a hot dog warming container. I mean, that's pretty fucking funny.
Yeah.
Like, just from an improvisational first aid thing. And I guess, so she cut this guy's dick off, and he was so drunk and or tired. Here's the other thing. Here's the first, my problem with this story. He says he's so tired that he essentially, like, it took him a while to wake up to the fact that his penis was severed. He seems like he was actually, like, I don't believe this guy had two beers and a cocktail. I believe he was probably really drunk.
I could believe that he maybe thought he was dreaming.
Really?
Which is one of the things. Yeah, I've had dreams that I've woken up from that I spend 5 minutes realizing we're not actually happening.
But was your state, were you like, was your dick cut off and you were spurting blood everywhere? Like, that's where...
No, but it took me a while to shake myself out of a dream. I could imagine the opposite could be true. To maybe wake up thinking this reality you're in is actually a dream because it's so fucking beyond the pale.
Right.
I could see that.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. We have to see, because they also, I didn't think they did a very good job covering his trial.
No, I think the first episode is a little jumbled. Like,
yeah,
tonally, it's weird. Like, they bounce between the very serious reporting and court case and these jokes, and they just kind of bounce all over the place.
It's also weird that both Lorraine and John, them both, they're interviewing them separately, and they're both kind of joking about it too.
Yeah.
I guess
20 years on, 25 years on, what are you going to do?
How did you feel when it was suddenly Jehovah's Witness?
I saw those awakes and I freaked the fuck out.
I remember those awakes.
Past, yeah.
I placed those awakes with people. And I'm like, are they going to try to like, I think that's interesting. The fact that she was, that a Jehovah's Witness dropped those particular things off. I don't know whether she was return visit or whether, you know, it's an odd thing to drop those two particular pamphlets off.
If you're not familiar, the Awake magazines are Jehovah's Witness advertising material, essentially,
yeah,
that they give to people when they go out in field service and they knock on your door and you express any kind of interest, they'll leave
those
with you.
And the Awake is more of like a general interest. Like, yeah, it always is about God and his kingdom, but like it's more of about science and current events, where the Watchtower is much more, this is doctrinal things.
Uh-huh.
So these are these two articles about marital rape and domestic abuse. And I thought there's also interesting setting the societal stage is like currently in Virginia, in the 90s, marital rape was defined as, first of all, there's not a lot of states that had marital rape definitions. Like, there's many, many, over half of the states, like, if you had sex with a woman who you were married to against her will in any circumstance, you couldn't be raped because you can't essentially rape your wife.
Yeah. I mean, aside from a dick chop, that was maybe the most fucked up thing in this whole episode.
And even Virginia, who had the forethought to put a marital rape law on the books, you had to fulfill two conditions. Number one, be physically separated at the time of the sex. So if you were living with your husband, he came home drunkenly and wanted to force himself on you, then that was cool.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, you had to do grievous and permanent damage in the sexual assault.
Yeah.
Which is an incredibly high barrier to be found guilty. So even though, like, and you all those states are like, okay, about 20, 25 of them have marital rape laws. If the majority of them were like this, then what kind of teeth did they have at all?
Right.
So I enjoyed that kind of historical perspective. It's weird that I felt like the documentary itself was engaging in a lot of like finding the humor in the situation and kind of making it into a joke, covering the fact it was kind of a joke, and also trying to make it seem like, well, the documentary is not going to have an opinion just yet on who's right and who's wrong. I felt like the documentary hasn't even got its thesis out yet.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I'm mostly with you. I do feel, you know, kind of like you said earlier, that this is going to lean a direction.
Sure. It has to.
And I think it's going to be sort of in favor of the abuse and marital rape, being the bigger, scarier thing societally. Like,
yeah,
I mean, it's noteworthy that chopping off a man's dick was noteworthy.
Sure.
Right.
Because it's something that happens every day.
Right. It's something that men don't have to deal with on a daily basis. Whereas women, even today, even 25 years after this mm-hmm. happened, are still dealing with the very same issues.
Right.
In the very same frequencies.
Yes.
So the bigger problem here is pretty obvious.
Right.
And I think the documentary is going to lean in toward that.
I think it's also the other thing is like that this just kept. It's kind of like, so like if John's penis was not able to be successfully reattached and he just was like no penis man, I wonder like if this would have died down, because it's almost like, I remember that like it was like a fascination that people like wanted to see pictures of it. He actually had a brief mm-hmm. porn career. Where like, you know, there's this sister's like, you know, what does this dick look like? Does it still work? Does it do this? Like, it kept on perpetuating yeah. itself. It never, like, it the story kept on getting more and more bizarre. Because honestly, if you'd asked me in the 1990s if you could get a penis severed, if a woman could take it outside, drive X amount of distance away, throw it out into the air, into a field,
to a parking lot, essentially, in 7-Eleven.
And have it found hours later, unrefrigerated, I'd be like, there's absolutely no way that penis is ever going to function.
Yeah.
Apparently it does.
Yeah, the microsurgeon, the urologist, they've... Wow. I'm impressed.
Yeah.
Modern medicine, y'all.
I guess if my dick is ever severed, I want to find this guy, get him out of retirement, because he did a hell of a job.
Do you think he's still, like... You think he's ever done a penis reattachment since?
I don't think that penises typically get detached very often.
Yeah.
And like, especially in kind of like, I could see like if like a penis gets ripped or crushed off in some kind of freak industrial accident, but then you're not reattaching anything.
No, it's hamburger.
Yeah. Like the I don't know. It'd be, it kind of raises the exciting possibility of a dick transplant.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah. Like if you wanted to.
Yeah, I just want a fucking.
You want a cadaver dick because you're not satisfied with your own. You want to try that out. Like, I feel like that would absolutely work, because under not optimal conditions. Yeah. I mean, you'd have to worry about the body rejecting the donor penis. But
yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. But if you had if like somebody did get grizzled in some kind of industrial accident or war, I guess like this also happens. You know, there's a couple notable cases in the different, Middle Eastern wars we've been in where guys have gotten their bit shot off. Like cadaver dick would be an interesting. Like, you know, you hear that, like, you see those commercials where it's like, my son helped 9 other people live. And it talks about, like,
gave
the old
his
lady.
Kidneys and heart.
Yeah, got cataracts and he did lungs and heart. And then there's, like, some.
My body helped one guy fuck.
Yeah, there's some kind of, like, shy, embarrassed looking dude with this thumbs up and an uncertain look on his face in the corner, like. Tommy gave me his dick so that I can fuck. I mean, this is it's like this is all serious, but like, what the hell?
Know,
how do you
I
not
know.
Make jokes about it?
You can't not, because I'm still that 9-year-old.
Yeah,
I'm still that fucking 9-year-old.
It's like that Rick and Morty said, like, we are obsessed with making dick jokes. Like, they're funny when they're big, they're funny when they're small, they're funny when they're detached. It's like, yeah. So I'm going to get I to me. I guess I'm already, I feel like a little bit, if it's going to the, I would be, if it's going to the route that like Lorena Bobbitt was a victim of marital rape and abuse, and I'm already on board with like, okay, that's terrible. And she's at least somewhat justified and at least certainly understood. I think if I remember correctly, she was found guilty, but by reason of temporary insanity. So essentially, she had like a couple months psych hold and then she was released and he was found not guilty. So like there was no real legal cover. And I feel like I already am pretty well versed in the current state of like female and male relationships. So I gotta see this. I gotta see this next episode really pick it up before, because I think that otherwise it's just not going to be interesting enough to hold my attention.
Yeah, I'm looking at this more as like filling in my blanks on something that happened in my lifetime.
Mm.
Kind of like I did with American Crime Story. Where that was probably more heavily fictionalized.
Yeah.
But, you know, it kind of filled in my knowledge on just the issues swirling around the case. I think this is another one where I was just slightly too young to appreciate the full magnitude of it. And I'm kind of interested in it from that angle.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you this. How do you feel about this whole situation if the defense had said, yeah, go ahead and bring the cameras into the court? What happens?
How does that
then
change things, I guess?
Like, does it make the story bigger? Does it, because it would have shined a much bigger spotlight, right? To have actual footage as opposed to these fucking court drawings.
It was already pretty, like, I remember.
I know, that's what I'm saying. Like, how much bigger could it have been? Would it have been? And I'm not saying that's a good thing. I'm actually thinking it probably would have been negative.
The other thing I remember, I don't know. I have no idea how to answer that.
Okay.
One thing I thought was interesting, because, you know, Jehovah's Witnesses, you can say a lot of things about them, but one of the things you can say is it's very patriarchal organization. Like it's on, like, I don't know if it still happens, probably, because what the hell would change them? But like it was on the reg where elders would get up and make extremely patronizing statements about their wives' relationships and how they treat them and how, you know, what do you got to do with women? Sometimes you just got to. And I remember there was like a little bit of a civil war, at least in the rural congregation I went to, where I think the men were just like, can you even believe this shit? And we've got like, you know, they didn't need to see any facts. This was just like terrible. Right. And like, I remember there was definitely some women being like, I kind of understand where this lady's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was the case of society at large. Just, you know, I was older than you, but still not fully adult. Mm-hmm. And I just observed a lot of like, felt like the facts of people's personal experience. And I also know from my own experience that there's no shortage of domestic abuse within witness families. And there was a lot of those poor sisters living quiet lives of desperation with really shitty men. And I felt like there was a little bit of like a big disconnect where a lot of these women were like, yeah, I could see being in a situation where I'd do that. And like the men kind of being horrified to learn this about the women. You were probably way too young to get any of that.
Oh, yeah. Being picked.
But yeah. I remember because I was the like field service conversations got really awkward and stilted sometimes, you know, especially if you got a single sister that was kind of relatively younger with like a 45, 50 year old elder that was like spouting off, like there was some interesting barn burning conversations. And I wish I could have participated in larger society to see what it's like, but I guess that's what this documentary is for.
Yeah.
Is there anything else we want to talk about? Oh, John fucking Bobbitt has the white leather version of your Bald Move couch. Did you notice that? It's the exact same thing.
I couldn't help but notice the bachelor pad style living conditions of both of them, actually.
Yeah.
The white couch, it's very, very similar.
Yeah, I wonder how this guy's life turned out, because it was interesting that one of the lawyer's defenses of him was he's literally too stupid to lie.
Well, the lawyer said he was too stupid to tell the truth.
Well,
and
yeah,
then realized, I fucked up.
But that was an actual argument. This guy's too simple to even construct a fictional narrative, which I feel like in just this episode alone that he had like three different explanations for what happened that night.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, she tried, but I wasn't into it and I fell asleep. And, we had consensual sex or we weren't having sex. Like, what is that? If you tell three different versions of the truth, is that not a lie?
Yeah, no, it has to be.
So I think just on the evidence I've seen with my own two eyes in the 1 hour that I've seen that this guy is sophisticated enough to construct a narrative.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. We'll see. I'm really curious to see how this next episode goes. Cause that to me is going to say whether I'm going to finish the thing and have more to say about it. But,
okay.
Anything else you want to talk about?
No.
All right, so that's Lorena, that's Umbrella Academy. We'll be back next week with some more thoughts on probably both of those. Also, a fresh crop of new shows that we'll be talking about. Stay tuned for that, and also our Bald Movies feed. And don't forget, we're also talking True Detective. We'll be back next week for another Bald Movie TV. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.